Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Growth Well podcast, where we explore the art of balancing professional growth and personal well-being. I'm your host, Josh Bird. Thanks, as always, to my partner at MarketScale, who makes this podcast happen and allows us to be able to have these amazing conversations with these amazing people. Today, I've got an amazing guest that was a referral from a past guest. And we met for a virtual coffee because she lives in Montana. And from that day, I've just been so excited to record this podcast. And I am so excited for you to hear it. Her name is Kate Van Wass. And she has gone from being a Mars scientist to fighting global poverty to now being a leadership and development coach. She lives in Billings, Montana and does all things outdoors. She's married and has a 4 and a 7-year-old girl. So, you know, we share that. I've got a 9 and 11-year-old girl that I love so much. So without further ado, thank you, Kate, for being here. I'm so excited to have you.
I'm excited to be here. Thanks, Josh.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So in a minute, I want to hear from you and a little bit of your background because it's so interesting. But before we do, I was, you know, doing my research for this, and you probably have one of my favorite LinkedIn like subheads that I've ever seen. So I want to read this. You know, most of them like me is like marketing guy, CGO, startup guy, whatever. Yours says leadership doesn't have to be lonely. Actually, let me start over. Yours says supporting evolving leaders and boards as your co-strategist, co-conspirator, and invisible co-pilot, because leadership doesn't have to be lonely. You've got this, and I've got your back. Wow! What an awesome encouragement to anybody who visits your LinkedIn page, and we'll put that link in the show notes. But where did that come from? I'm curious.
Yeah. It's really at the core of what I do, right? Because I found when I was advising leaders, so I've spent time in the past advising cabinet level leaders, ambassadors, that kind of thing, rock stars. and then being a leader myself when I, you know, in various positions, including as the executive director of a national nonprofit. And all of those times, one of the things that struck me the most is that leadership really can be so lonely, especially when you're at the top.
Yes.
Even if you have a great team under you and say a great board, or if you're a cabinet level person, a great president, who's your boss, or American people, who's your boss?
Yeah.
It can be, you don't have any direct colleagues, right?
Yeah.
So, and you can't bring it home to your spouse or your roommate all the time, right? So it's just an incredibly lonely thing where you are making, ultimately the buck stops with you. You're making really big decisions that can affect people's lives and your business and all of that. And what I often found that I needed and they needed was just someone who had their back, someone who was in their corner, someone who was looking out for them, who was checking on them. No one ever checks on you when you're the leader, right? No one says, hey, how are you doing today, Josh? Are you doing okay running this business, right? How are you feeling today? What's weighing on you? That's what drives my business, is being there to shore up leaders who are, especially leaders who are women or people of color or queer or any identity where you feel like you're putting a square peg into a hole that is not a shape that was made for you. Like you're putting a square peg into a round hole. You're trying to lead in a system that wasn't built for you. And that makes it even lonelier. And so,
try to
make it less lonely. Be the thought partner.
Leadership in business is hard enough without having it be, you know, not built for you. If you are of an identity that is not, you know, quote, normal in your field. And that's really hard. But how did you get here? Give us a little bit of background, your background. I mean, like I said, when we were talking before this, I was like, I don't even know where to start with your intro because you have such a fun background. So would you tell us a little bit about how you got to where you are today?
Yeah. And actually my weird windy background like that, I always like to joke that I have the weirdest resume you'll ever see is actually what led me to some career coaching too. Cause
the most interesting people did not advance in their career in a straight line or anything similar. It's that, you know, meme that you see where the line starts going up and to the right and then gets all jumbled and goes backwards and forwards and up and down and eventually goes, you know, that's really the truth of the matter, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. 100%. Yeah. So I started in astrophysics in undergrad. And the reason I majored in astrophysics is that I was like, I need to major in the hardest thing because it's the hardest thing.
Like,
I'm not even sure it was because this is the thing that I'm definitely the most interested in so much. I mean, I was, but it was more, which one is hardest? Okay, I'll do that one. I don't advise that for your decision-making process, by the way. So I'm not saying this is the right thing to do. And then
what was it about the difficulty that made you choose that way? Why did you choose the hardest thing? Was that some sort of catharsis or, you know?
No, it was like I needed to prove that I could do that. Like I had to always be the straight A student. And now I need to be the straight A student in the hardest major or something. Right?
Gotcha. you had a chip on your shoulder and you had to
I guess.
Did it though. Good for you.
Yeah, I did not get straight A's. Let's be clear. But yes, I did it. But I did pretty well. I didn't get straight A's, but I did well. And then I decided, you know what? I don't want to keep doing astrophysics. I want to do geology. But I found out that there was this thing called planetary geology where you could study the geology of planets. And I was like, oh, it's kind of a combination between geology and astrophysics. That's cool. That's what I'll do for grad school. So I just decided to start applying to geology departments. And that gives me, that's kind of your first clue into, I don't really care what you say has to happen because I was applying to get a graduate degree when I had zero undergraduate experience in that field whatsoever. So I'm applying to geology departments and they're like, do you ever take a geology course? Not a one.
Nope. Like, sorry.
Nope. So I did planetary geology and, I loved it. I loved that field. I was more interested in that, partly because geology means you get to spend some time outside, right? So less time, you know, staying up all night, looking at a computer screen readout of what's coming through the telescopes and more, being out in the field, which is great. Except that a lot of the geology that I did was all remote sensing. So I was looking at computers, but I had fun. I had an advisor who was not such a great person and really taught me some, in the wrong way, work-life balance lessons that we can talk about when we get to
work-life balance. Absolutely.
So I did planetary geology and then the 08-09 economy collapse happened. When I was supposed to be looking for my tenure track position, because, you know, you've got, and I said supposed to be, of course, because that is what academia teaches you, right? That there's one right path and you go undergrad and then you get a master's and then a PhD and then you do a postdoc or two and then you become a tenure track professor. But the economy collapsed. All the searches were canceled. Everybody was on a hiring freeze. And so I knew about this fellowship that a friend of mine had done for to put PhD scientists into government. And so I kind of threw a Hail Mary pass and applied for that. It's a really hard fellowship to get, but I got it. And I got placed in an office at the State Department that was supposed to be working on climate change because I had been kind of working on climate change on Mars. And then 2 weeks before I started, they're like, just kidding, you're going to be working on food security. And I was like,
food?
And they were like, no, that's food safety. This is hunger, global hunger and malnutrition. Awesome. Again, zero about that topic. And I
sometimes those are the best things because you can throw yourself into them, right? Because they're just,
So I'm like, all right, I better learn it fast. And then that was incredible. It opened up a whole new world to me because you come out of academia like a brand new baby. You have no idea how to get a quote unquote real job because you're never trained for any of that, right? So this was a whole new world. And I was doing UN negotiations and I was sitting in the, you know, the Situation Room in the White House, representing the State Department on making some big decisions around terrorism and humanitarian aid and advising cabinet level officials and ambassadors. I mean, it was, and leading some of the negotiations. It was just a complete turnaround. And I absolutely loved it because it was all about people. It was about quick decision-making. It was about making this positive difference in the world. I wasn't sitting for months at a time in front of my computer working on one research project, right? And so I realized that that quick pace and that very action-oriented, like things are happening right now in the world, was what I needed. So that was incredible. Yeah. And then I worked for Bono's nonprofit for a while, building up their work on women-led economic growth in sub-Saharan Africa and agricultural development and ending malnutrition and that kind of thing. And then I feel like I've been going on too long.
It's fine. It's so good. It's so interesting, right? Is you've had this path that's led you to here, but you've done so much good at every stop, right? And you haven't always been, you know, balanced like we talk about on this show a lot, which we'll get into, but it seems to have always had this equal parts purpose and kind of a, what the hell, let's go for it. Kind of, you know, a little bit of a risk-taking sort of thing, right? Where it's big, it's huge, it's audacious. And you're like, you know, a lot of people will ask, why me? And it seems you said, why not me? Let's go, right? And let's just do it. Yeah. And I love that. I love that. So let's talk a little bit about purpose and how that has played into that path that you just talked about and how it shifted over the years, if it has, right? What kind of guides you when the days are really hard to wake up in the morning?
My 4-year-old.
Absolutely.
I mean,
I'm surrounded by. Okay. There's I thought that. You meant just your love for her, and I'm like, I'm surrounded by pictures of my family too. But I got you. Yeah, I remember those days.
Make sure I wake up. Okay.
I have I have a 4-year-old golden retriever that doesn't allow me to sleep past 7:30. Period. Yeah. Never.
So that's the real answer. And then the more philosophical answer is just positive action and change in the world. Making the world, I mean, it sounds so cheesy, but making the world a better place. And even when I was doing science, it felt like that. You know, I think there's, you know, scientific research is really important, right? Answering our big questions about the universe is really important. I think what didn't drive me is it wasn't people-oriented enough for me. Mm. Like the parts that were super fun was when I was organizing a conference or a workshop or like organizing a team of people, like getting a team of people together who had been really disagreeing about some topic, like vociferously disagreeing in the scientific world and getting them to come together, right? That kind of thing I thought was super fun. That's what I love about it. And so I think I've always been people driven. I need to be working with people, for people, supporting people.
I agree. I'm the same way. I think in many ways we're cut from the same cloth there. So, you know, you've been doing this successfully over the years. Have you established, you know, rituals, habits, routines that kind of help keep you professionally growing, personally healthy, kind of keep that work-life balance? And where did those come from?
I think it has the routines that I have developed, and I think it's true for anyone, they've changed over time. Right. And what work-life balance is for any of us is very different, right? We all need different amounts of sleep. There's different things we want to do. Some of us have kids, some don't, et cetera, right? So we all have different definitions, even over the course of our lives, of what work-life balance means, right? So when I was working at the State Department and I was sometimes working, you know, 12 or 15 hour days or longer. If I was at some UN negotiations somewhere, you know, and I was traveling all over the world and I'd wake up and forget what continent I was on, like what hotel I was in. Right. I didn't have kids yet. I wasn't married. I had gotten divorced and had not met my now husband and hadn't had our two kids yet and all of that. And so I could go still hang out with my friends afterwards. I didn't, you know, because I had no other responsibilities other than that intense amount of work. And I loved it. I absolutely loved it. I was perfectly fine.
Yeah.
That was my work-life balance. I didn't need any more than that. I loved traveling all over the place. I loved who I was working with. So that was fun. And now, you know, obviously, like, you know, I had our first child when my husband was deployed. He was in command of a ship and I was still working in international development. That's when I was working for Bono's nonprofit. And I was like, I can't be traveling all over the world like this anymore.
Yeah.
And I traveled to London at one point, very pregnant. And I was like, nope, we're done.
Yep.
One time
kids
that was
changed good everything. Kids yeah. change everything and they're incredible, but mm-hmm. I don't know if it's possible to have kids and it not change everything. I think that's the way maybe it's supposed to be.
Yeah, it is supposed to be that way. And that's fine. That's totally fine. I mean, even with my, even like the way that we spend time outdoors, right? My husband used to do mm-hmm. a lot of mountaineering. I used to go backpacking all the time. I used to go climbing outside and all that stuff, right?
Yeah.
Skiing when I lived in Switzerland, I could go skiing every weekend. It was awesome. And now even that kind of thing, you know, with the now having kids, especially such young ones, it becomes different. We might make it a mile, right? With a lot of snacks along the way, we might make it a mile without before the whining starts. And that's fine, right? We're also stopping to look at every caterpillar along the way or whatever.
Yes.
It's a whole new way of looking at adventure, right? So the way kids change things, totally fine. And the way that I, so work-wise now, I realized, you know, I was the executive director of a national nonprofit for a while. And that was, there were many, many things that were wonderful about it and rewarding, but I realized that my work-life balance was off when I was starting to become really brittle. I wasn't, I'm usually the one that's like cracking jokes in the workplace, it's being funny, like I'm silly at home with my kids or whatever. I wasn't silly anymore. I was just the best way I could describe it is brittle. There was nothing malleable and soft about me, right? And it isn't even that I felt angry all the time, just, not me. And I wasn't laughing and cracking jokes. And I was like,
life's too short to not laugh, right?
Yeah. And so I spent some time when I left. It was also just time. It was time. I was hired to like turn the organization around. I did that. And then it was time to like hand it off to the next, to the next leaders, fresh leaders. Right. And so I resigned and then just spent 3 months being like, it was Q4, right, of that year of 2022. So I was like, I'm just gonna be mom and do the holidays. I love holidays. I'm going to holiday the heck out of this, like Hallmark movie holiday.
Awesome. Deck all the halls, do all the trees inside and out. I got you.
All the things and figure out what I want to do next. And so when I started building my business, I was like, I am going to, on purpose, build in that flexibility without any guilt at all to take my girls to gymnastics and to, you know, play with them at night instead of, you know, having dinner and then working until bedtime or whatever. Right. So I've just like purposefully built that in. It's a conscious part of the way that I build my schedule. And since I can set my own schedule, I can do that.
Yeah. So I want to dive into that because I think a lot of our listeners have experienced it. I know I've experienced guilt for, maybe not working a 40-hour week or working not traditional hours or, charging what they're worth. Like a lot of people feel a lot of guilt over things that I think maybe we shouldn't. And so I'm curious, did you struggle with that and how did you move past that? Or were you just kind of done and you were like, I'm going to do this and so be it?
I think mostly that. I think mostly the latter. I'm just going to do this because it's really important to me. And I saw what was happening to me, and I wasn't being present enough, as present as I wanted to be as a mom and as a wife and as a sister and a friend and a daughter and all of that. Right. I didn't feel present enough to myself and the other people in my life. So I was like, I've got to call it. Change this. And I had another moment like that. And sometimes it takes a forcing mechanism, right? Like sometimes it just takes, this just feels really bad. And I have got to fix this now because I want my kids to have this magical a childhood as possible. Like we all do for our kids. Right.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I had another moment like that in grad school where, because the advisor I had, I mean, he's known to just, I don't mind saying it publicly, he's still alive, but he's known to be not a nice person. He had very tight control on us. Like most people you hear about in grad school, it's not so rigid, right? Like you're doing this research and a really cool time of exploration. No, this was like, you don't get any vacation. You are on call all the time. You will work, 7 days a week kind of thing. And I ended up very depressed and very anxious and, went to see a therapist, of course, needed medication to get past that. Right. Cause I was, pretty significantly depressed. And I had never been in that situation before. And I took a year off and taught at a community college and I had a blast, and my colleagues there really, they were all much, much older than I, but they really shored me up. They were like, you don't have to listen to him. Don't be doing that. Like they really and it's funny because it was all these older men who were like the same age as my advisor, but they were like, don't listen to that guy. Like they were totally pushing me in the right direction. So that after a year at the community college, I came back and I was like, you don't get to do that to me anymore. And you can take it out on me however you want, but I'm not working on the weekend.
I love that.
I'm leaving at 5.
I love that.
That being it took though, like depression, anxiety, therapy, a year off. Like, it's not like I was like, I'm just gonna fight the man.
Absolutely. I get it. But you said something, when we scheduled this time for recording, there's a little question and I ask something along the lines of, what do you want to share? And you may not even remember this, but in the moment you wrote, rest and recovery are also forms of productivity. And that just like smacked me because we live in such a productivity crazed world. In fact, at one time I was trying to do some productivity coaching and I hated it because it was like, I don't believe it, right? I believe in the balance that you're talking about. And that's what gave life to this show. And so I love that. And I think that, that's a cool way to look at it.
Thanks. Yeah. And I mean, I say this to a lot of my clients too. When you're doing anything like starting a new business, making a career switch, contemplating a career change or even a job change, a lot of things in life require the creative side of our brain, not the analytical side. There's so many things we do that we're trained to use our analytical brain for it, right? We're like, I will carve out time in the week and I will think about this and I will write pros and cons lists and I will make a spreadsheet and blah, blah, blah. And we sit there and bang our heads against a virtual wall, for hours on end, getting nowhere and wonder why. And it's because we are completely ignoring the creative side of our brain because we think that's unproductive to feed that. And feeding that is rest. It is being outside. It is mountain biking in your case, or, hiking or skiing or climbing or whatever. In my case, it's listening to music. It can be coloring in an adult coloring book. I don't care.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, right? It's all making music. It's all those things are actually productive because they feed your creative brain. And when you do that and you also allow yourself that rest, that downtime to let your body process things and your brain process things, then every time you come back at some point and get it all done in an hour, something that would have taken you days.
Yeah.
Every time.
I'm curious. You have the same 24 hours, 7 days a week that I do, that every listener does. You know, how do you build your schedule to make sure that you have time for that? And I know time blocking is the answer, but deeper than that, how do you think about your schedule and your day to day to make sure that you're giving yourself that space?
I can be more flexible in my job in a way. I mean, I have a lot of meetings with clients and stuff, but I try to be, so I always build in time in my day to make sure that I go out and take at least a 20-minute walk, even if I've worked out in the morning, and I work out every morning, or if I don't work out and have coffee, I don't human. So
yeah,
there's that. It's part of my balance. Mommy has to work out. But then, you know, I make sure I take a 20-minute walk outside so I can be outside. So I'm away from my computer. So I'm moving, because you also process information differently when you're walking. That's why walking meditation is a thing, right? With Buddhist monks. And I'm sure others. But I'm flexible about when that happens, right? Because if I time block too much, then it's like, you know what? I'm actually feeling really in the groove on this thing. I don't want to break it up and take a walk, right? Versus, like, let's say I've carved out time and I'm like, that is when I am going to write a LinkedIn article or something, right? And I go to sit down and put virtual pen to paper, and I'm like, I've got nothing. And then I know, you know what? It's time for your walk.
Time for your walk.
So I think time blocking is important, but also being flexible with yourself.
Yeah.
And making sure that your time blocking isn't just task oriented, or that you start considering breaks as tasks that have to be completed. Right.
Yeah.
So you're going to absolutely do some yoga or meditate or whatever.
Yeah. Get your heart rate up, whatever it is. I'm a work in progress on that. One of the things with my business that I'm seeing is we're very seasonal. We're in a very busy, time of year right now. And so I actually have a tool that I use that, it automatically schedules 15-minute buffers on the backside of every meeting. And I try, when I see that reminder, I go walk at least upstairs, right? Upstairs to the kitchen and grab a water, grab a coffee, grab a banana, whatever. If it's a little more time, I take my dog on a walk or something. It's interesting. I just recently started leaving my cell phone at home when I do that, or on my desk. Mm-hmm. And as small as that is, that disconnect is very real to me. And so there is something to that movement, to that forced break, and holding it loosely. 'Cause I think there are times when you're busier or not busy and you've got to pay attention. So that leads me to a little bit of a parallel question, which is, we're not always the best judges of when we're getting brittle or when we're getting off balance. And so do you have mechanisms in your life or people or coaches or what have you that help you recognize that before your kind of inner self recognizes it?
Yeah. I mean, I think my husband and I are pretty good at doing that for each other. And I think we also know, and I'm sure this happens to all of us, like if he's like, basically like, Kate, it's, you know, what's happening here. If I have this gut reaction, defensive reaction, then I'm like, dang it, he's probably right. You know, like that reaction comes from knowing he's right. And I like,
Need to take another walk. Yeah. Might need to take another walk and think about that one.
Exactly. Let's talk about that after I take a walk. But honestly, ever since I kind of had that epiphany, when I resigned from my previous job, and again, I don't want to say there was anything wrong with the previous job or the place, great. But when
you
I
did
had
amazing
that
work
of where I was for myself of like, yeah, I'm not laughing anymore. I've lost my sense of humor. That's mm-hmm. a pretty good tell for me.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I should be a stand-up comic. I'm saying
no,
at least for me.
When you there's a sense yeah. of levity in life, or I believe there should yeah. be, right? Where it's, yeah. you know, not every moment has to be so intense. Not every moment has to be pre-programmed to the max potential and max productivity. It's mm-hmm. more kind of it's balance. And balance, I find, is a terrible word because it really betrays the work that it takes to stay there, right? Mm-hmm. But it's what we call it in our society, and so yeah. we use it. But life throws us curveballs, and so mm-hmm. like besides taking a walk or holding things loosely, is there a go-to that you have that when you know you get knocked off track, it's just like, okay, mommy needs this, or Kate needs this, or you know, consultant needs this, whatever that role is you're playing at the time. Mm-hmm. What is that go-to for you? How do you reset?
That's a really good question. And yeah, life definitely throws curveballs. We've all had our major curveballs, right? Personal ones we've collectively experienced, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think this is going to sound like a very simple thing, but it's been very powerful for me and works for me. And I think we all need to find our thing. But for one, if I'm starting to feel that buildup of anxiety or that buildup of I'm getting to that point, then, and I'm like, feel like I'm reacting very strongly to everything kind of like this, and my whole body's yeah. curling up in itself and, then I know one of the things I know I need to take a break from is social media and,
yes.
and the news and all of that. Right. And I know that I need to pay attention to all of those things because I need to be part of the fight for the greater good. But, and also yes. you've got to put your own oxygen mask on before you put everybody else's on. Right. Even though it's yeah. not my MO, my MO is put everybody else's
yeah.
on. So you have to, so I put my, I started charging my phone outside my bedroom, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm not looking at it before I go to sleep. I'm reading a novel, doing crossword puzzles, you know,
yes.
watching something with my husband, whatever, but we're hanging out. And then I don't see it in the morning when I wake up. Admittedly,
yeah.
that makes it hard to wake up.
yeah.
I'm like, I'm just waking up now in a room. Like I haven't done this since the 80s.
Yeah.
Whatever. So there's that. But then when life really throws me a curveball, the honest answer to something that has always helped me, besides obviously therapy, right? I always am mm-hmm. a big proponent yeah. of therapy and all of that.
Huge fan.
Yeah. Professional help is going for a hike.
Yeah.
Being outside in nature, because something about being outside and that, and now that I live in Montana again, it's
I'm awesome. So jealous.
It's so accessible.
So jealous.
It's so beautiful. But something about like it's still there, like that hasn't
yeah.
changed. Like those
That's
mountains
right.
are still there, and that lake is still there, and there's something, and the woods are still there, whatever. Like the birds are still singing, the deer are still wandering around. Like it
yeah.
calms my body down. It's like, okay, not everything has like is a dumpster fire.
That's right.
Right.
That's right. We yeah. are gonna be okay. Mm-hmm. And you better be careful, by the way, because I'm going to come like show up on your door and be like, hey, I'm going to camp out here for a little while on your porch and do all those hikes you told me okay. about. So, but I mean, I literally for our listeners, I went to Montana in the summer of 2024. So last year, by the time this comes out, and I fell in love. And like, I have three monitors for my work in front of me, and they're all a combination of me and my wife and my kids in Montana. And it's a special place. It's a really, really special place. Well,
it looks like computer wallpaper everywhere.
yeah. I just want to, I've got some decor ideas for my office, and they all surround themselves with Montana. And I'm like, gee, maybe I just need to move there. I don't think that would fly right now, but you know, we'll see. but I digress. So one of the things that's been the common thread throughout your career is helping people, right? Mm-hmm. And that's really why I started this podcast, part to explore for my own self as I'm learning to be a little more mature, perhaps, and a little bit more balanced, and realizing that balance is an act. It's not a thing. It's and so what advice from your wealth of experience, you know, would you give our listeners who many of them that I've talked to, they're just business people. They're husbands and wives and fathers and mothers, and they're stretched to their last wit sometimes. What would you tell them? What have you learned that maybe you could pass on?
I mean, yeah. Wow. Putting
you on the spot here. Sorry.
No, I know. And it's okay. I mean, one of the things I would say, and again, it's really hard to say something that applies to kind of every situation, right? Because there are so many different ways that we can be stretched thin, right? Yes, we're parents, we're, you know, now, and then you're like, sometimes you're parenting your kids while you're caring for elderly parents. And, you know, some people are working 2 and 3 jobs, right? To try to make ends meet, or they're parenting alone or whatever. Like, there's a lot weighing on so many people, right?
Yeah.
And so it's hard to say something that will apply to everybody. But one of the things that I have noticed, and this is just going to sound like a kind of a broken record, we kind of talked about this before, at least for myself, is that I always get more done if I am paying attention to filling up the other parts of me. Right. So,
yes.
So I'm not religious, but there's still like a kind of a spiritual side to everybody, if you will. Right. There's like a part of your kind of like core being that you need to pay attention to. Right. Whether you're religious or not, there's your physical health, your mental health, and all of that is filled by many different things, right? By moving every day, by being with people you love, spending time with people you love, getting rest, spending creative time, all of that. And when you take the time when you actually, you know, in jobs where you can, where you cut it off at 5 and just say, I'm not doing it. And I have been in jobs where they expected me to stay until who knows when and be on call, you know, when no one was dying. Right. So I'm like, I've been expected to, and I've pushed back. Right. And I've said, I'm cutting it off, because then what happens is I come in the next day and I get just as much done, if not more, than the folks who are at it all the time. So you have to, at some point, just trust yourself and trust that when you are neglecting the parts of you that aren't the strict work analytical parts of you, when you neglect the rest of it, that work analytical part will peter out. The batteries will die. It won't. And so you have to trust that if you fill your whole self and you pay attention to your whole self, like, trust yourself.
Yeah.
You will function better. You will be better at what you do. You will be a better human to yourself and to everybody you love and everybody who loves you and your coworkers.
That's right.
You have to trust that. And it can be really hard it can feel like, when you're so used to that hustle culture, that culture of like how busy you are, or back in the day, how often you were on your BlackBerry in DC.
Yeah.
How important you are as a person, or how much you matter, right? When you're so used to that, it can feel like you're stepping off a cliff without a wingsuit.
Yeah.
I wouldn't do it with a wingsuit either, just to be clear.
No, that's one of those extreme sports that I won't ever do.
Right. But it can feel like you're just stepping right off a cliff into nothing. Yeah. It can feel really scary, but you've got to trust that you will function better and last longer and be more useful to yourself and the world.
Yeah. That is so good and so profound and seemingly so simple, but it's really not. Like I said, it's an act, and it's an act of self-love, right? And it's an act of self-love. It's that, like you just mentioned, the oxygen mask thing. It's an act of self-love to then love others, because you can't pour out of an empty cup. Nope. And so I love that. So, you know, what's next for you? What's on the horizon for your consulting business or your family? What's going on in your world that you're excited about? I love ending on, you know, advice and then just talking about joy. Yeah. What's bringing you joy?
The holidays. I'm totally nerd out about the holidays. I love the holidays. Yeah. So there's that. And it's really fun with little kids because it's like magical. Yeah,
And you have white Christmas too, right? So yeah. You're lucky there.
Yearly, we have white Halloween and white Easter and a brown Christmas. Often. So.
That's unbelievable. Yeah, that's unbelievable. Climate change, huh?
Yeah. Completely wrong. But no, the funny thing is, especially when I hang out in entrepreneurship circles, which I often do, I'm not looking to create a $1 million plus business. I'm not looking to grow huge. I'm really not, because I love what I'm doing. I do a lot of nonprofit board development. I do a lot of executive leadership coaching and advising for for-profit and nonprofit. Do a lot of shoring up these organizations to be better and helping with workplace culture and career coaching and all of that. I love what I do. And the balance right now is right for me. And I actually I partner with other consultants on bigger projects, and that's really fun because then I get to work with different types of experts on different things all the time. I like kind of being, and even though my husband might come into this business a little bit too, so it might be both of us, but for now it's mostly just me running it. Right. And I love that because now I get to really tap into my intuition and I'm deciding who I'm working with. I'm deciding how I'm going to do it. I'm deciding what I'm focusing on, and I'm really having to really trust myself. Right. Cause now if I don't do it, if I don't get it right, I'm not pulling in a paycheck. And we all
paycheck. Yeah, absolutely. That's huge. But there's so much power in that, and being able to say no to something that you know is not good for you. And ultimately, if it's not good for you, it's not good for the world. And there's a lot of power in that. It's scary. The first time you turn business down, it's really scary, but I think it's a muscle you exercise, right? And you get used to, and I think, you know, it comes down to, are you viewing your life and the opportunities in front of you through a lens of abundance or scarcity, right? Yeah. And if you can learn, and it's really hard, don't get me wrong, but if you can learn that, like, hey, if I turn down this piece of business or this opportunity, there's plenty more out there. You know, my wife often, she got it from an author. I'm not sure, it may be Brené Brown, but she says, what's your best yes? You know, you can't do it all. And what is your best yes? And so, you know, let's collaborate too. Yes. Find others.
More than just turning down. Like, you know, I see so much I'm in competition with you. So I'm not going to tell you about this organization that's looking for a coach or whatever, right? And I'm like, there's so much work to do out there. Let's work.
Sending referrals. And since I've moved back in-house and I'm not doing much consulting right now, I have a few people that I commonly send referrals to. And it's so fun because they flourish and I'm so happy. Mm-hmm. And I'm happy in my career. So it's good for all of us. Mm-hmm. So anyway, well, thank you so, so, so much for this conversation and for being here. I can't wait for this to come out and our listeners to hear about you. We'll put your LinkedIn in the comments so that they can meet you. And just thank you.
Thanks so much, Josh. It was really fun.
Absolutely. So that's a wrap, everyone. Thanks again to my sponsors at Market Scale for making this podcast happen. This is the Growth Well Show. Tell your friends. We'd love to see it grow this year. And until we meet again, go out there and pursue growth well.